Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we delve deep into the gravity-based side of mountain biking. This week, the podcast is supported by Abbey Bike Tools and Nukeproof. Abbey Bike Tools are making top quality precision tools specifically designed for the needs of the bike world. The quality of the tools is second to none, and as a result, you'll see them as the tool company of choice in many of the top mechanics' toolkits. Aaron Gwynn's mechanic, John Hall, is a big fan, and that speaks volumes for just how good these tools are. They have a wide range of tools available over at abbeybiketools.com, and what's even better is that they've now got a couple of full toolbox options available too. So if you've ever drawled over those amazing World Cup mechanics toolboxes with the cut foam inserts, the pull-out trays, the amazing layouts, and all the tools you need, then this is your chance to own a toolbox just like that. If you want the best quality precision tools to look after your bike, then head to abbeybiketools.com and check out what they have to offer. Nukeproof are well known for their bikes, but they also have a great range of components. I'm running the bars, stem, headset, bottom bracket and pedals on my new bike, and I've been really impressed with them. Their products often come out as best in test in magazine reviews, and they recently topped NBR's selection of the best flat pedal with the new Sam Hill Enduro pedal. I'd highly recommend you check out what they have to offer if you're looking to build a new bike or upgrade your existing ride. You can do that over at nukeproof.com, and for you Downtime listeners, Nukeproof are giving away a set of their new Horizon wheels worth £400 in whatever size you need for your bike. To be in with a chance of winning, just head over to downtimepodcast.com/nukeproof and answer the ridiculously easy question before the end of July. Be quick, you've not got long left. If you want to show your support for the podcast, you can do that by grabbing yourself a t-shirt over at downtimepodcast.com/shop. Thanks to everyone who's already got one. If you're not yet subscribed to the podcast, then get it done. It's free, it's very easy to do, and it means you will never miss an episode. Just head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe and click the button for whichever platform is best for you. While you're there, fill out the form and join my newsletter, and I'll send you a weekly weekend warm-up of some interesting bike-related things that I've seen during the week, along with the links to any of the competitions and some insight into products that I've been using and enjoying. Please also give us a follow on Instagram or Facebook where we're at Downtime Podcast. And if you've got a couple of minutes, then leaving us a review wherever it is you listen to the show really helps other people find what we're doing. All right, this week I'm joined by Sam Blenkinsop. Sam has long been one of my favourite riders to watch, and it was a real pleasure to get the chance to sit down for a chat. We chat about how he got into riding and those early days racing with Wim Masters. We get into his climb up the World Cup ranks, talk about what went on with his amazing World Cup win at the Schladming World Cup in 2008, and what it's been like having teammates like Nico Vulius and Loic Bruni. We cover Crankworks, that amazing gamble segment, becoming a dad, and much more. So, without further ado, here's Sam Blenkinsop. Sam Blenkinsop, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's things with you?
Yeah, good, thanks. It's just pretty much like an off-season for me at the moment. It's a little bit strange. Like normally I will be in Europe, kind of peak race season. And yeah, I'm in New Zealand at the moment. My first winter, full winter in 16 years. So it's really strange, eh?
Yeah, but nice spending a bit of time with your daughter, I guess, being at home for a long period.
Yeah, this is actually the cool part about it. And also seeing the winter, like it's been so long because I've never been in Christchurch for like the middle of winter. I've always just seen the springtime when the season's over. So it's different. That's the hard part about it. Like obviously I feel like the guys in the UK, you know, it's so hard to kind of motivate yourself to go outside and train in the mud. But our winters are pretty mellow. It's like 10 degrees and it's not too bad. But we've had the last couple of weeks have been lots of rain. So the trails are just sopping wet and kind of too slippery to ride. And they close the trails here in the winter, which is kind of the hard part about it. So you don't really have much to ride on for technical wise. So you're pretty much just on the road bike or in the trainer in the shed.
Yeah, not so much fun that, is it?
Nah, but it's still obviously I get to hang out with my daughter and hang out with my wife. So it's still the cool part, you know?
Nice, nice. Well, let's wind the clock back a little bit, get back to the early days. Tell us a little bit about how you got into riding in the first place.
So It was a long time ago. I was 11, 12. So I was coming out of, I started intermediate. I started riding push bikes and just for fun, really, just BMX and just going to the skate park and having a little bit of fun. And then once I started at high school, when my first year, I kind of got into mountain biking. I had just a full rigid mountain bike and just really got onto it. And then obviously met Wyn Masters, because he was, at the time he was going to collegiate in Whanganui, and he said, well, we pretty much just kicked off, like, because I don't think he had no one to ride with then. We pretty much just like started our friendship there, and we just pretty much rode every day after that. And yeah, pretty much helped me start my career, Wyn did. So yeah, we just built dirt jumps every day and went to the skate park and pretty much just rode from sun up to sun down and just lived on a loaf of bread and just rode all day with fizzy drink. And yeah, I don't know how we did it back then, but we did. And then he said, come to some races. There was a race, like a club race, and I did that and obviously did pretty well. And then, yeah, just pretty much started from there. I just knew I loved riding, and racing just kind of came natural after that, just because it's just like riding your bike. But then you get to do, instead of, because we at that time we were just pushing our bikes up the hill, and then when you went to a race you got a shuttle up and then you just raced down, so that was even better, you know.
Yeah, and your parents were a big part of kind of enabling you to get to races and keep up with the sport, I suppose. Yeah,
oh, for sure. Like, yeah, obviously when you had to race out of town, and obviously going to the races, that was the biggest part, you know, because you being 13 and like you can't drive anywhere, you can't get a license until you're 16 in New Zealand, and then by the time you've got the decent license you're like 17, 18. So yeah, without your parents taking you to the races, you just got no show of like doing it. And yeah, my parents put a lot of time and effort into me. Like, obviously my dad and my mum just love coming to the races, and without them I wouldn't be here. And obviously it was a help to Wyn as well, because he was in a boarding school, so his parents weren't in Whanganui, so he came with us most of the time to some races as well. So it was just like, yeah, like kind of just a friendship that we kind of helped each other too. So it was awesome.
Awesome, yeah. And your dad was putting in like extra shifts at work and stuff, is that right?
Yeah, he'd always do that, and just so that he could get like the weekends off, or at the nationals, like when we started to race national stuff, we'd have to go away for like most of the week, you know, so he'd have to do extra hours, and then just so he could get time off as well, so we could get away and race. And yeah, obviously the first races that we went to were a bit of a shock to us, because I was on my full hardtail. I remember my first national I went to in Hawke's Bay, and I went on my hardtail, and it was just, I just had skate park tires on, didn't even really know anything, because obviously racing in Whanganui, most of the time it was just, the trails were quite flatter and we didn't have the gnarliest stuff yet. So yeah, the first national I went to, the practice day was really good. It was dry, so I was loving it. And then we woke up the next day, because we stayed out at the race, and it just like rained all night. So I was like, first practice run, it took me like forever to get down. I just remember crashing everywhere, and people were just like all over the place. Everyone was doing the same, because I think I did one practice run and then I went straight into my race run like after that, and I didn't even finish my race run. I remember watching the pro elite guys come down and I was just like, oh my God. And I remember seeing Justin Leoff at the time. He had a big stump and actually ripped his frame in half. So it was a massive eye-opener, like pretty much watching the race. But then, yeah, I felt kind of like bad for my dad, because we went all the way to the racing and then I didn't even finish the race. But then after that we realized, you know, you have to put some money into your bike to be able to race the bike. So I remember the next race we went to was National Champs in Rotorua, and we had new tires and everything, so we were prepared for that one. And yeah, that one went pretty well. I think I was second behind Wyn, so it was pretty good.
Nice. Did you ever feel any pressure then from the fact that your parents were kind of putting so much into the sport for you?
Not really. I felt kind of bad at that race because I didn't finish the race. And because I'd done like well in the races in Whanganui and stuff, and I knew I was good enough to be on the podium, you know, when I was that age. And I guess I feel like I let my dad down because we drove, obviously dad took the time off like on Friday off work so we could go to the race. And then, yeah, I feel like I just kind of, I gave up because I couldn't get down the hill. It was just too scary for me. So yeah. After that, we just realized that, you know, you had to have the proper equipment to be able to race properly. And then we did that. So yeah, it was just like, yeah, you know, learn mistakes you learn from going to the races, really.
Yeah, for sure. So how did you get then from kind of riding local and national level races to your first experience on the World Cup stage?
Yeah, I went, so obviously I did quite well, like growing up, I was always one of the top juniors, me and Wynn. And then when we were younger, when we were juniors, we went up a grade. Because we were just winning everything, so it was too easy for us. It wasn't too easy, but it was only me and Wynn. So uh-huh. We went up a grade. We went into the elite class when we were still juniors. And I don't think they let anyone do that anymore. But me and Wynn managed to do that. So we're racing the elite guys, and we were getting on the podium most weekends as a junior against the elite guys. And then after that, a New Zealand company kind of helped me, Wide Open Distributors, and yeah, I just wanted to go to, it was always my dream to go overseas and race. And I went to World Champs when I was first year junior, and I just did World Championships. Yeah, in Livigno. I think I finished, in the top 10, I think. I can't remember, it's so long ago, but I just remember just loving it. I was just riding every day of all the Kiwi guys, because the year after was the one in Rotorua World Championships. Yeah. So that's why New Zealand kind of put a lot of money in. So they sent a big team of us Kiwis to go there. And we went there and like kind of had like a training camp, and they put up a hotel. And I just remember it was just like such an awesome time riding in Livigno. And the downhill track there was just, it's probably still to this day, probably one of the most awesome downhill tracks I've ever ridden or raced on, you know, because it was just so natural and fast and flowy. And I still remember the finish just being so awesome, eh? And then, yeah, just from there on, we came into my national series the year after, and Fabian Burrell and quite a few other like top World Cup guys came over. And I remember racing the national in the same place where I didn't finish that year when I was a young fella in Hawke's Bay, and I raced Fabian Burrell, and I was a junior, and I beat him, and he was the world champ. He was actually the world champion that year. So whoa, beating the world champion as a junior, and I was racing an elite. So yeah, I guess that opened up a few eyes for like people overseas to get me a ride.
Yeah,
and after that there was the guy from that was sponsoring me at the time, Wide Open Distributors, Matt Whitaker, he just put the feelers out there at Vegas at the Interbike show, and there was just quite a few people keen. And I was riding Turner Bikes at the time, and there was a company, like a team starting up, Gravity Group Republic. Uh-huh. And pretty much, yeah, just signed a deal with them for 2 years, and yeah, just pretty much helped me get to overseas racing. Otherwise, it would have been just a really hard thing for me to do, because I remember going that first year, just a Kiwi junior boy. Like, it's different to the kids these days. They've got a little bit more insight, because they see it. Like, I didn't know anything. I just remember seeing it on the magazines, and we didn't really have like videos and that kind of stuff in those days. It seems like it's so long ago, but it's not. It's like 16 years ago. So, just going to Europe. I remember flying into Innsbruck and just kind of, we didn't really like, I think we talked on the phone to Peter, which was the team manager before it, and my parents just pretty much just paid for the flight and just sent me away at the start of the season. And I remember just being in Europe for 6 months, just loving it. And it was kind of hard that year because, yeah, we did lots of testing and it was just so awesome racing and like riding in Italy. And yeah, I remember the first race I went to in Italy, and where was it? San Remo. When it used to be quite a big, like, start of the season race. And I remember my first race just coming in and just winning the race and beating, like, obviously a lot of the top juniors at the time, and yeah, Brendan Fairclough as well. So I bet, like, and then that was just like, you know, just the starter of like just things to come. But then that time I was doing a lot of stuff, so I was doing four cross as well as downhill, so I was just doing everything, and just all I thought was just ride my bike every day and just love it. But I think it was too much. So once we got to the first World Cup in Vigo in Spain, I just on practice day and on the four cross, I just remember sprinting into this big double, and because I was riding flats at the time, my gears slipped and blew my foot off and just dug into the ground. But I was going so fast that I already took off the lip, so I'd take off the lip with my foot off straight over the bars and just straight to my collarbone and snap my collarbone. So that was my 4 weeks of the start of my career just down the drain. So I pretty much just had to sit. I could have gone home back to New Zealand, but I just wanted to just stay in Europe, and I just stayed in Europe and hang out with the team and kind of just watched. I guess that was kind of good for me because I kind of watched all the pro guys racing, and I just remember going up just watching all the races and just loving it too. And then obviously after 4 weeks of recovery, I just got back on the bike and yeah, just started racing again, and kind of started off like I was not scared or anything and just started racing again, and I was doing well. So I remember winning my first as a junior, because back then you raced against the elites as well. So I remember doing my first World Cup, and I think I finished in just outside the top 20, and that was in Brazil. So that was kind of cool. And that year we traveled a lot of different places. So it was quite awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. And that was the year that you had, like you say, world champs on home turf in Rotorua. Did you think you could take the win? Cause that was second year junior. You've got a bit of experience under your belt at World Cup level at that point. How did you feel coming into that?
Yeah, obviously, it was a weird one because like I broke my collarbone at the start of the season and just kind of rode the bike and had fun, and I didn't really have any pressure, you know. I just rode like I always did, and I knew in New Zealand I'd done well at that track. Like I'd won, I think I was or second against like some of the top guys that came for their test race. And I put in a good time against some of the elite guys that come over the year before for, I think it was the national we had. And I knew I just had to ride my bike, but as a junior, you know, it never happens like that. I just went balls to the wall. It was so muddy that, yeah, I just remember coming into the Larches. That's like a big section, a really steep kind of rooty and just like these big drops. And I remember just coming in too hot, and the rut was kind of blowing out, and I remember just hitting the section really well, but my front wheel just went a little bit too far and slid out and hit the tree and just took me out. And I just remember holding onto the bike because it was such a steep section. So I went over the bars, but I kept hold on the bike, and the bike just flicked down and dragged with me. So I managed to like go over the bars and then hold onto the bike somehow and then just flick around. And I just remember the crowd just going nuts. I couldn't even hear anything, but just like everyone screaming, because it was like the one section where everyone was watching because it was the gnarliest one. And then just got back on the bike and just sprinted to the finish. And I didn't really give up because it, you know, when you give up, sometimes I don't know, some people give up when after they crash because they know it's the end. But as a junior, you know, you never know what's going to happen. It was a muddy race. And then I kind of went too hard near the finish like area, the next section. And I think if I didn't hit the next, like I hit this next section way too fast and I just slid out and then hit a tree and came to a fully stop again. And I think if I never hit that next tree, I would have won because I was only a second off the win with all those like crashes and stuff. But it was still such like a awesome thing for me just to race at home and just having fun on the bike really. And then, yeah, pretty much after that, we did heaps of filming with Clay Porter and then kind of started my career after that. And yeah.
Well, after that, so 2007 was your first year kind of in elite. Obviously, you'd already been racing against the elite guys anyway, but actually in the elite category. And it was a pretty solid season. But then I guess the standout result, you got inside the top 10 at World Champs in Fort William that year. That must have opened a few people's eyes.
Yeah, I think I did because I always enjoyed I didn't ride there the year before because I had a broken collarbone. So I was just watching. And I guess the longer tracks kind of suit me. And I was just having fun. I remember that year was probably the hardest one I've ever raced just because it was so windy. Everyone was getting blown off the like bridges and stuff because it was that windy. And the vision was real hard because like I remember just pulling my tear offs and I ripped all of them off and then I couldn't really see the rest of the track. And that was might have been the last year we had skin suits. So it was like I didn't really practice in one, but I remember just being like, it just felt like I was like had a motor everywhere just because of the wind. There was the wind and you just felt so smooth and everything. Like felt like you didn't even have to try on the bike. It was just crazy. And then, yeah, just had fun on the bike. And then obviously getting in the top 10 was awesome. But I just remember that race, just like putting on the skin suit and just riding the muddiest stuff and just feeling like you had a motor, like a motor on your bike, just because you're moving so fast after wearing all the big baggy stuff, like in the top section, because it's all so open there. But yeah, there was obviously, you know, it's the same sort of thing as what New Zealand was the year before for World Championships. It was just like a massive mud fest, but yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. And was that part of kind of how the Yeti Fox thing came about? Because I think it was the following season that you moved on to that team, which must have been a bit of a dream.
Yeah. So I think the main thing was because Justin Leoff was on the team. So he was talking to the manager and I was talking to Damien at the time as well. And we just kind of got on really well because I hanged out with them most of the time because with my team, it was we were always pitted pretty close to each other. So I'd hang out with Justin and yeah, it was a massive eye-opener for me going from like Gravity Group to Yeti. Because like I didn't like the years before I didn't know nothing about anything. I just rode my bike and that was it. I just went down the trail, just had fun and did some kind of training a little bit. But with Justin it was so good because he was like he knew everything. And with being on Yeti too, we did so much testing with Fox and it was such a massive eye-opener for me because before that I just put 40 PSI on my tires and just sent it down the hill and that was it. I just loved it. But then going onto Yeti, we did like testing of suspension and tire pressure and everything. And everything was such a major thing. So I feel like I dialed in everything. My bike was awesome. And then it just kind of cleaned everything up. And then also working with Justin with training and stuff, he just kind of kicked our asses all year, just working us like to train. And I just did what he was doing. So we just trained really hard together. And then it kind of just worked out, I guess. We just raced really well. And then, yeah, coming in, like the season was awesome for me. Like I had lots of good races and then some bad ones. But then obviously winning in Schladming was a massive thing for me that year. Because being from like first year in elite, then to coming into your second year as an elite to win a World Cup was massive for me. And I think it was mainly to do with being like kind of from all the testing and everything and just making my bike feel awesome, eh? So I felt like at that race, all I had to do was just ride my bike and no one could stop me. Like my race run felt so just smooth and fun and easy, you know. But that kind of track, it was like you're on a wave, you know, it's hard to explain. But yeah, I remember always, every time I go race at Innschleben, it's just kind of the same. I wish we could go back there, but it's like riding a freshly like ripped moto track when it's just awesome and you just feel like you're flying, you know. But yeah, we obviously we can't go to those places all the time. So yeah.
Yeah, you're not the only one, I think, that wants to go back to Schladming, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. Was that your first time as fastest qualifier and last man down the hill as well?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Did that change anything for you? Did it? Because I think for a lot of people that could put a lot of pressure on your set of shoulders.
I think I had less pressure because I was up there by myself just having a laugh with my mechanic and yeah, there was no one around. It just felt like I was doing a practice run and just rode my bike and just had fun really. So yeah, it was, honestly, that day felt easier than any other race I've done. So yeah, there was nothing on my shoulders or anything. It's kind of strange.
And what do you think it was that kind of clicked? Do you think it's, like you say, the bike setup was really, really good, but you had that for a lot of the season. Is there something in that track for you, or have you ever been able to kind of pinpoint what went on?
I think I've always been quite good at like muddy conditions that have good supported corners and ruts. And at that time I was riding flat pedals. So I felt like I could just ride as hard as I could, like anywhere I wanted to, you know. I was just smashing everything and all the corners would hold really well. And yeah, I guess it just worked out that it did, because the year before I remember racing that track and I did really well. And, when I was on the other team, when I was on Gravity Group on my Turner, and I did really well in practice and stuff, but in qualifying, I went over the bars and I remember my splits. I was like really high. I think I was like fifth or something and going over the bars, and I broke my finger. So in the race run, I couldn't even put down anything. And I think I still finished in the top 20 with a broken finger without being able to brake. So I knew that that track suited me. So I guess I just, yeah, just, and it's just, you get those days, you know, when you have, it feels like, I don't know. I remember when I was riding, I just felt like angry, but not angry. It's like angry fast. Like sometimes I get that on a bike, like I feel I can just do anything.
Yeah.
So when, for me, it's like when it's not angry, but it's like, I feel like I'm aggressive. Really aggressive, but nothing can stop me. So it just, I felt like I was doing that and just flowing the whole weekend and just felt like no one could stop me. And it was just, yeah, it just works like that. I've had heaps of other times like that when I've raced as well, but yeah, it's just, yeah, that, I remember that was the first time I've kind of felt that in my whole weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked, I mean, I remember watching that run and it was insane to watch, but your speed through that kind of bottom open field section, there was like an kind of off camber bit where you're pretty much drifting at some crazy speed across there. Like,
yeah.
You clearly felt like you could get away with anything on that bike on that day.
Oh yeah. And the weird thing was, like, cause before that I was riding a large bike and then, the bike actually broke in practice. So all we had was a medium. So I remember racing on a smaller bike. It was tiny. You look back and you just see me hanging off I'm like back over the back axle. The bike's just tiny, but I guess I didn't really, I was still like, at that time, I still didn't even care. I was just loving it. Eh?
Amazing. Did you have a bet on that year with Justin Leov as well? Like something to do with the overall time or something?
Yeah, well, Justin did well. I think he came down in fifth and I was the last person. So Justin was like, if I'd crashed, he would be on the podium. But yeah, we always did that. I guess that kind of started, like, we always started a rivalry because, like, every race would be like, haha, I beat you. He'd beat me. And then the next race, I'd beat him and I'd be like, I beat you. I'm younger than you, I bet you. And I guess like it was like kind of like a rivalry we had against each other. So it was kind of cool because we trained together and we'd ride together. And then it was really weird because I guess we'd always switch positions, would be really close in time. So I guess when you're riding like that, because I've had that it was the same when I was on La Pierre with Loic as well. We were the same sort of thing. You know, you ride to give a, you have a rivalry against the team, but yeah, it's always, you're so close riding your times together. So it's crazy like that. You know, you have the same equipment, you have the same food, everything. You got you're hanging out with each other, and then the time's the same. You know, I wish I was on Specialized now. Maybe I'd be winning world championships. Maybe. Nah.
Well, how did it feel then standing on that top step? Because I think you were the first Kiwi to win a World Cup at that point, and you also stood kind of on the podium with Sam Hill, PE, G, like. I mean, it was a hell of a lineup.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, I remember coming down and I was just like, it didn't feel real, you know? I was more stoked that I just had a good run. And then everyone was like going crazy. And I was just like, wow, this is crazy. I've done well in races before, but nothing like this. Everyone was just like, all the eyes were on me. Everyone was like shaking my hand, like, oh, this is awesome. And I was just like, whoa, yeah, okay, this is crazy. And then it kind of didn't sink in until later that night when I was just sitting around with the team, and I was just like, man, it makes you kind of feel like on top of the world. Like, you look back and then you're just like, man, it actually happened. You're like, you've done all the stuff, but I was still kind of still really young then, and I was just like, all I cared about was just riding my bike and having fun on my bike. But yeah, obviously beating Sam Hill on that track, like seeing him dominate years before and that kind of being like Sam Hill's track, and then being able to beat him on that track was pretty cool too.
Yeah, fair play. It was a wild race, and definitely worth rewatching for people that haven't seen it for a while.
Yeah.
So once you'd had that win, did you think you'd be able to replicate it? Did you kind of get that feeling that you'd be able to crest the wave? Because it was the last round of the year, wasn't it? So you've got that tricky kind of off-season gap to deal with before you can go at it again.
Yeah, and obviously I finished the season in fifth overall as well, so it was kind of cool to do that as well. And then, just went home, kind of did the same sort of thing. We did some filming with Clay Porter for another video for a film, and just did the same sort of stuff I did the year before, just training, and did the New Zealand Nationals, and just felt like I was going to come into the next season and win most of the races, and as you do as a young kid. But they kind of didn't work like that. I struggled a little bit. I guess we had everything, like the bike was awesome and everything. We did lots of testing, and obviously, like, from coming in, there was lots of eyes on me at the first race, and I guess I was a little bit nervous. And yeah, just I had a lot of ups and downs that season. But then the same sort of thing. I think Schladming was not the final that year, or maybe it was the final again, but I still finished second behind Sam. So that was kind of cool again. So that season, and yeah, just finding it, just, it was hard to find like the rhythm. I've always kind of struggled that most of my career, like to find the good rhythm at every race, to be able to do well at every race. I can do it. I've done well some years, and then some years are just being really bad, and then some years I'm just on top of the world again. So that's the only thing in my career that I kind of wish I didn't struggle in it as so much. But I guess, I don't know, it's just been like that. It's strange. Yeah, fair play. It's a hard thing to put my finger on, but yeah, my career's kind of been like a roller coaster.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the consistency side of things in a bit. But so that 09 season, like you say, a few ups and downs, but second place to Sam in Schladming's pretty awesome place to be. And then 2010, you moved to La Pierre. How did that move come about? It must have been another pretty exciting change.
Yeah, at the time they were looking for a rider, and I remember talking to the team, same sort of thing, that I hanged out with them because Danny Hart was on the team at the time when he was a junior, and that was pretty much the reason why I was keen to sign, because I got on with Danny really well, and he came to New Zealand, we had lots of fun riding together, and I was like, oh, this would be cool to have a teammate that I could ride with again, so just like how I had with Justin Leoff. And same with when I was on Gravity Group with Philip Polk as well. It's really cool having a good teammate to ride with. And I thought, oh, this would be cool, have a really fast, like, kind of junior that I could kind of feel like I did, like Justin did to me. So I feel like I'd push Danny, and it would be cool to have like some fun racing together. And just when you have a teammate, it just helps the rivalry. And I knew it was going to be, harder with the French management, and that. So it would be cool to have a English speaking person on the team. But obviously there was some problems with Danny's like father or something. They didn't want to, and they didn't really get along or whatever. So they kind of got rid of Danny, which was kind of a shame for me, but I still came into that year on La Pierre. Just, I remember I broke my scaphoid in one of the national rounds. So before I started on the team, I remember going to France. They had some testing. So I flew over there because I was trying to ride and stuff, and I didn't know. I thought, like, New Zealand doctors here were pretty useless. They were just like, oh, yeah, it's just a sprain. You'll be right. Just leave it. And so I'd just keep riding, and I'd just be like, oh, man, it's in pain. And I couldn't even pull up. But I remember just riding my jet ski heaps, and it was all good because you're not pulling up on your jet ski. You just got weight down, and it felt fine. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'll come to Europe and we'll start testing. I remember doing my first run in San Remo, and I was just like, no, I can't even ride. It's impossible. And luckily, Laurent, the team manager, was just like, okay, I know a really good person that can come and kind of have a look at it. And so I got an MRI on it, and they seen it straight away. Yeah, you've got a broken scaphoid. So I went home. Luckily, it was early enough in the season, so I got it pinned, and once the stitches had healed, I was back on the bike, and it was like nothing even happened. So I kind of just rode the whole season with a wristband, like a wrist protector thing, so it stopped my, because obviously the ligaments and everything were not fully healed. But I remember just like if you sprain your wrists, it like pull your wrist back really fast, it'd feel like I sprain it. So I just remember that wrist thing would just help me really well, and then just raced the whole season and did the best season of my career. So I finished third in the overall, and had some good races, and I remember winning, I think, most of the qualifying that year, but just couldn't really put the races together. And that was a good year for La Pierre, obviously, because it was a new year for a new bike that they developed, and just putting their trust in this dodgy Kiwi kid that had long, scruffy hair and rode flat pedals. And they were such a professional team, which kind of helped me, obviously, being with Nico and testing with him a lot, kind of opened my eyes up to a lot more than what I'd seen on the previous teams, and then just kind of rolled on from there,
Yeah, I was going to ask what you learned from working with Nico, because he's obviously incredibly into the detail of everything. Were there certain things that you've changed as a result of that time you spent with him?
Oh, massively. Like, just the details on the bike, like how massive it helps you. Like, because we did so much testing on that team, like obviously develop all the bike, and obviously in the years it got a lot better, it got more professional, like we did a lot more testing. But it started off because of Nico, like he developed the bike, and just seeing how much he puts, like that's why he was such a good racer, because everything was perfect and he knew that it was perfect. So seeing that, like when we did testing, and just like he would just be like, see me on the track, and he'd be like, oh, this kid's just a little scruffy little bugger, but he just needs to tidy up his riding. And I just kind of pointed and shooted and just loved it. And yeah, I had a different, like, I didn't have the same sort of like mindset as he did, but I just kind of just did my riding and just enjoyed it.
Yeah. So like you say, 2010 was your most consistent season. 2011 wasn't quite as good, but you had a really good result, world champs that year in Chomprey, where you took bronze. And again, kind of wet, pretty technical track. Do you think that helps you? Are you a a better rider in the wet? Do you find it easier on those longer technical tracks? What do you think it is that leads to those results?
I think just growing up here in New Zealand, we raced like every weekend in the mud. Like all our races were in the winter in Whanganui, and it was just terrible conditions all the time. And it was just the easy thing. It's just like the guys that in UK, you know, that they do really well in the wet as well. And we just brought up as it in it. So it's just natural for us, you know, it seems easy. So it was just the same sort of thing. And then the track was just really steep and technical and gnarly. And I just remember it was just a lot easier because you just had to ride down and just get down the hill. And I remember I just slid out one bit and lost a little bit of time. But other than that, I just had a pretty clean run. And that's all you had to do to get on the podium there. And I did that. So I was third. And, yeah, it was a massive like thing for me being the first time on the podium. At first elite for New Zealand to be on the podium for World Championships was pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, big time. And then that same year, some kid called Loic Bruni turns up on the team, and I think he's also pretty much your biggest fan at that point in time. What was it like when Loic joined?
Yeah, it was funny. I remember the year before when I did that, been on the podium, his heaps of his friends come over, and he was like, oh, yeah, Loic wants your jersey. He's a big fan of you, and he was too scared to come and see me or something. And so his friends got a jersey. I signed up for him, and he was so stoked. And then I remember the next year he was on the team, so it was real funny. And then after that, it was just like, yeah, a massive friendship and the same sort of thing, rivalry. We raced together and always beating each other, obviously not as a junior, but then when he came into the elite ranks. But yeah, it was a cool thing having him as a teammate. You know, he's just, I guess he, lots of things rubbed off from me to him. So he's kind of like a Kiwi. I guess that's probably why he swears a little bit too much, but he just speaks his own mind, and that's why he's such a good person, you know. And he's, I remember him as a junior, is just such a smart like racer. He just knew he was teaching me things as his first year junior, you know, and he just wanted to be the best, and obviously he's been able to do that. And yeah, just seeing him grow as a person as well, because I've seen him as a junior when he didn't know anything. I remember came into the first race and he didn't have any we had breakfast, but it didn't have any stuff that he liked. So it was no Nutella, so he melted some chocolate in the microwave and put it on his baguette, because we're in Canada and Montserrat at the time. And it just cracked me up. I was like, man, we got cereal here. You can't have that rubbish. He's like, nah, but I like it for breakfast. It just cracked me up. And then he just rose the tent. He went to the race, and I think he did really well. I think he won in the junior class. And just, yeah. And then after that, seeing him grow into elite rider, just being such a professional person and just doing everything, the details, you know, now. So he doesn't eat his Nutella on bread anymore, that's for sure.
How is it when you've got someone like joining the team at junior that then kind of, you know, they start closing that gap to you, and then the first time they beat you, like, are you cool with that, or like, how do you feel about that sort of that rivalry, I suppose?
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard one. Like you're really stoked, because it was different for him, because I had that the whole time in every team that I was on. You know, you'd always want to be the best rider on the team. And you, like, same way when I was on Yeti and Gravity Group, you know, you wanted to be the best rider in the team. But it was different with Luke, because he was like kind of like my brother. So, and he was younger. He was the only person that was kind of younger that come up and bet me. So it was like, I was a little bit pissed off, but then also just so stoked for him, because I knew it was going to happen, because he was such a good rider and he was so smart with everything. So I knew it was just a matter of time before he started smoking me and then pretty much kicked me off the team.
Well, yeah. So 2015, you moved over onto Norco Factory Racing. How did that move come about?
Basically, I was talking, I knew that the the team talked to me and they're like, yeah, we can't afford you for the next season. So I started looking around, and then at the time I had my coach, Todd Shumlick, mm-hmm. that was, he was like, yeah, Norco have come to me and they want to start a team with us. And I thought, like, I really liked what Norco were doing, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this is cool. And I liked the bike and it looked pretty cool. And it was always, it was pretty cool to kind of start my, like, I got to choose most of the stuff on the team, like the suspension and all the stuff that I wanted to run on a bike. So it was kind of cool to have that kind of input as well. So I was like, oh, yeah, this will be cool. And then, yeah, we just started like that, really, just chatting, and pretty much everything came around for the next season. And then, yeah, just the same sort of stuff. It was just really awesome working with Norco. It was different than what I've had in the past, you know, with LaPierre. We didn't have as much testing and stuff, and it wasn't like all like perfect. They didn't have enough, like, as much money to put into like the testing and stuff. But just seeing the developing, like, of the bikes and how much they've grown since I've been with the company is massive, you know. Since the 6 years I've been with them, it's been huge, you know, starting with kind of like a bike that I felt like it was a good bike, but it wasn't a really good race bike for me. But then helping develop this new bike that I'm on now, the high pivot, the single pivot, just kind of, I felt like that was my kind of like a bike that I helped to kind of develop and design, and it feels like a little bit of me in that bike. So I was kind of stoked to be on a kind of riding for a team with that kind of input is really cool. So that's why I've been really stoked to work with Norco, because there's lots more that are coming, and they just keep growing, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of development that went into that bike here. So were you quite heavily involved in that?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I struggled with the current bike because it was a really good bike park bike, but I just felt like I couldn't really race it. So I took the chain off a lot, and it just worked really good, that bike, when I took the chain off. And that kind of put my eyes into, like, oh, maybe if we could go high pivot. But then obviously the engineer had lots of ideas. He wanted to make a high pivot. He really liked the design, and he'd seen other bikes that work really well. And then I guess that kind of helped, because I struggled with the other bike, it helped like the company go, okay, let's do this design that the engineer's really keen on. And yeah, helped it kind of grow and then just kind of just shoot out. Because yeah, there was a good bike to race on, but it just, like, when the track got really rough, I just feel like I couldn't push the edges like I did on previous bikes. And mm-hmm. yeah, once we got this high pivot, I just knew there was nothing that could stop me. It was just like, I feel like I still can't find any track rough enough for it to kind of just spit you off, you know. It's just like a beast that just loves rough conditions.
Nice one. So yeah, I guess, like you say, from there, results have been like a little bit up and down over the years. And in 2016, you took on quite a few rounds of the Enduro World Series. Was there ever kind of a thought of moving into Enduro full time? Were you getting frustrated with kind of your ability to keep at the top end of the downhill side of things?
Not really. I just did the Enduro stuff just for fun and training. And okay. I just seemed to do pretty well at them. I was just like, it was just like a little, like, kind of, I feel like when I've done Enduro and then raced the downhill seasons, I've done a lot better, because I feel like it kind of tires me out a little bit. So, and also it's just really good, like, race training. Like, because you know, at a World Cup, you've got one run and then you make a mistake and then you're just pissed off for the next weekend. But with Enduro, you can make a mistake and then you've got another six race runs. So, you know, you can kind of just, like, train your racecraft a little bit. So, yeah, I feel like when I started Enduro, I just felt like it was more fun. It was just like a whole weekend of just riding your bike. So it's a lot different to racing World Cup. Like, World Cups, you're just going to the race and you kind of just sit around a lot. And you just feel like you're just waiting for the race run. And then if you make a mistake, then you're just, like, kind of gutted that you just spent all this time waiting around for the weekend for the one race run, and then you made a mistake, and then you've just missed out by like half a second or something to where you want to be. So I feel like the enduro stuff is definitely like something that I'd probably put more time and effort into in the future. But at the moment, I'm just loving the downhill bike. Eh? Just from being here in New Zealand at the moment, I feel like the other day I rode my downhill bike for the first time in a long time. And I just felt like I was 16 again on my downhill bike and just wanted to go racing. I was like, man, this is awesome, eh? And I felt like I was just riding like I used to. And I guess like time off is just massive, eh? And just makes you so much more hungry and just wanting to go racing and just go fly on your bike again. So it's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's cool, man. It's awesome that you're that stoked on it. And yeah, you, like I say, you sort of kind of refocused, I guess, on downhill after a bit of time with some enduro thrown in as well. But things, it looked like they took a bit of a turn for the better, especially in 2018. And from that consistency side of things, am I right in thinking you started working with a sports psychologist around that kind of time?
Yeah, a little bit. I did at the start of the season for that, and it was just more kind of me looking into it. I just took a little bit more time and effort. But I think the main thing was that was the kind of the first year we had this guy come on board, Arthur. He was just a wizard with everything and just pretty much helped me get my bike to like where I think like nothing could stop me, you know. And once you've got that kind of feeling on your bike, no one can stop you. So we did lots of testing. I felt like we came into that race like 100%. I felt like my bike was just on fire and I felt like nothing could stop me. And I guess that kind of, it was a weird one because I never really do well at shorter tracks. And then to be able to do like well on that track I was stoked. And I think it was just more the place. We did lots of testing before that. And I just felt like I was just like, came in just enjoying it, and just all I had to do was run my bike, and I did, and I did really well. So I was stoked to get back on the podium after kind of a few years of just average results. But I did well in like crank work stuff and that, but just nothing in World Cups. And I just felt like I was, you know, when you, after a few years of just kind of doing terribly, you find to just write yourself off a little bit. And I was getting ready to just almost just give it in, you know. But then when you get a good result, you're like, oh, okay, here we go. We're back in there. So it's all good. And then, yeah, just kind of just did the same sort of thing. I just went roller coaster in the season and just struggled a little bit, but still managed to just finish in the end of the overall, just outside the top 10. So I was stoked with that.
Yeah, for sure. And were you surprised by that fourth place at Lozenge? Because that's not the sort of track that I would necessarily pick as a track you'd be on the podium at.
Yeah. It was like that, but I feel like I was just riding really well. Like time training, I think I won both the time trainings, and then me and Brooke were really close. And I don't know, it seems like a weird one because it's not like something that we kind of race around here. I kind of, Christchurch is kind of where I live, is kind of like that in the summer, like rocky and loose, but not like that. But I guess mainly it's to do with just what we were testing on in Nice, that was kind of rocky and chundery like that, and the bike was just like, we didn't have to do anything. All I had to do was just go to the race and just ride my bike. We didn't have to figure out anything with the bike. It was already perfect. So I just had to ride my bike at that race, and yeah, it was just, things clicked. And I think I really enjoyed that place because it was like being by the sea. I remember going fishing with the GT guys and we were just having fun, and then just staying at the place. We're just at a resort, hanging out at the pool and going to the sauna, and then you get to go ride, and it was just like being on holiday, and then just go do a couple of runs and then go back on holiday and have good food and yeah, go on the boat, and it was just awesome.
Nice. And the only podium on the World Cup circuit where you can jump straight off into the water.
Yeah. And then the funny thing, I got my big trophy after that, and I remember looking at it And I tripped over because the cobblestones are all like real gnarly. One's high, one's low. And I tripped over and I dropped the trophy and it chipped the side and it fell in the sea. And luckily it wasn't too deep. So I jumped back in the water and it was like the yuckest water because it's all right by the other boats. And then I just jumped in there and grabbed it out. It was so salty and yuck. And I was so gutted because it was such a sick trophy. So I like cracked it. But it's a cool like momentum, you know, it's still stuck up. I look at it all the time and see the chip and the crack and I crack up.
Nice. And that year you took King of Crankworks as well, which I guess some people would say is harder than taking a World Cup overall as a kind of all-round bike rider. Tell us a little bit about that because you'd been, I guess, in the hunt for it for a few years.
Yeah, obviously I'd been second the 2 years before that and I didn't really – I was more focused on World Cup stuff. And then I guess just because I'd done really well in New Zealand and I was feeling good on the bike and had really good points. And I thought, oh, this could be my year, you know, because it's always hard. Like you have to start off the season really strong to keep it going because like Innsbruck and that the other guys have way more events than what I do. So I just had downhill and then it always comes down to Whistler because Whistler, there's a lot more downhill events that kind of suit me. And yeah, I just did really well that year and I was stoked to win King of Crankworks. And I guess I was more stoked on that than the World Cup podium because it was just like, I felt like it was something that I was kind of wanting for so long. And Crankworks has always been like almost like enduro to me, you know, because it's like you're doing so much in a weekend and it's just so fun. It's such a fun weekend, you know, a fun week because you've got so many races on. You feel like you're just running around and then there's media guys that want to do things with you and your friends want to go riding with you. There's just so much to do at Crankworks. So I feel like they're just such cool events. But, yeah, to win that one was amazing.
Yeah, and good prize money too.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one to bring home, you know.
Yeah, well, and good timing because the following year was the birth of your daughter, Indy. Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool. That's a pretty life-changing moment for anybody, I guess, let alone someone who's traveling around the world racing bikes a lot. How has that impacted you?
It's such a crazy thing. Like when my wife, my fiance, she came to me and she was like, oh. She had the test and she was like, oh, I'm pregnant. And I was just eating my dinner and I was just like, what? I was just like, oh, what? This is awesome. I was so stoked and I was just like, I didn't think I'd be like that. I just felt like, whoa. Like at the time, I felt like I wanted to cry. Like I felt like it was the best thing that ever happened to me, which was so weird, you know? Any race or anything, you could just throw that out the window. It just felt like, whoa, felt like life was coming to me.
yeah.
Kind of strange. But then obviously she was getting pregnant and everything and then it just kind of like nothing, it just felt like normal again. And then once obviously Indy came into the world and I was holding her, that first night, that's when it just like hit you. It's just like, wow, this is actually real. And, you know, you're just like kind of scared and you feel like you can't sleep the first night because you're just like worried about her if she's going to like anything could happen, you know, in the first night, you don't know. You feel really scared. So you're like waking up every 10 minutes just to see if she's all right or still breathing. I guess the first time any parent is kind of the same sort of thing, you know. You're like, you're really worried about anything that could happen or, I guess the next child that we have will just be so much more relaxed. But, yeah, we were just like, whoa. And then obviously after a few weeks, we just kind of settled in and just it was just like a normal thing. But, yeah, it's such a cool part of life, you know, seeing her grow. And she's one now and just seeing her like I kind of just see parts of me like in her. She's just kind of crazy and loves being like doing things I throw around and she loves it and just she plays on the bike and whatever toys she's just not afraid of anything, eh? So it's awesome. It's cool seeing her grow every day, like every day something's different, you know, she's learning something and she's just like a sponge, you know. It's awesome.
Cool, man. And how do you think it's impacted your riding, like and your racing especially, I suppose?
I don't know. It was different last year because I felt like I missed the World Cup because I had to come home, and I wasn't really like focused on the racing. I was just like more worried that I wasn't at home with my wife and kind of helping her. And then, but once they came to America and stuff, I was just so stoked. It was so awesome having my baby and my wife to be at the races with me. And it was just so cool just having them. But I guess I was still just like, wasn't really focused like I normally am. I was just more worried about just kind of having them there and just having a good time with them. And it was, it was a strange one because obviously we having a 3-month old come overseas and traveling, and you're worried about that. But having them there was so cool. But because they were at Crankworx with me in Canada and Whistler, and obviously we're just having fun. It was just like fun times again with the family. So I wasn't really too fussed on the racing. I was just enjoying time with them and time on my bike, really.
Nice. Yeah, it takes the pressure off the racing side a bit, I guess, puts everything into perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about now. And 2020 season started pretty well for you, I think. You became New Zealand national champ, is that right?
Yeah. And that's a strange thing for me because I've been racing in New Zealand for, God, 20 years or so, and it's something like that. And I feel like I've been chasing that national title for years. I've been close 1 year, and I remember all I had to do was just ride down and just sit out on a bridge and missed it. And then the other years they had these weird rules for a couple of years that the teams that I was on, they didn't want me to have it because you had to run the whole New Zealand jersey. So they didn't want me to run it at World Cups. So I couldn't, I just ride the race and just practice and didn't race because the teams didn't want me to win it. So yeah, I felt like it was the one, like a world championships for me, but it was good to finally get it after so many years. And obviously there was fast guys there, like the young Sam Robbie that's coming through, and it's just cool to finally get it.
Excellent.
So many years.
Yeah. So where do we go from here then? Like, what do you personally kind of want to achieve with your riding and your racing? Because, you know, you've obviously got a good few years left in you. Greg Minnar's proving that you can go a long way into your 30s and still be at the very top.
Yeah, I felt like, honestly, this year, I feel like I'm riding like I did when I was a kid again. Just like how I said before, you're like back at the start, angry, but just happy speed and just feeling like the bike's just working under me. And I felt like last year maybe I was a little bit afraid because I had to be there for my daughter or something, but something strange like that. But now I felt just happy on the bike and just really enjoying it. So it's a strange one because I wish the World Cup season had started because I was just kind of getting, I was on a roll. I felt like my training was really good and I started the season really well, like racing nationals was good and Crankworx, I was second behind McKenna, and I feel like the enduro stuff was going really well and feel like it was just rolling perfectly into the start of the season. And I knew it was going to be awesome to be racing in Portugal for a World Cup, like a new track that we'd never raced before. And everyone said it was such an awesome track and I was just stoking for it. But then I remember just being on the just on my phone ready just to be like, because I had to fly out that end of the day and I remember just waiting for just this answer from my team to say, oh, yes, get on the plane or not. And I remember I had to, I think it was a few hours and the team just messaged me before I had everything packed, like my bikes were all packed and everything ready to go. And the team was like, yeah, don't get on the plane. The race is cancelled, so don't go. And I was just like, whew, man, imagine if I'd been on the plane and they had just to turn around again, which was like most of the other like New Zealanders, like some juniors already were over there riding and stuff. So they had to just pretty much just wait around and then come back home. when they could get a flight, because it was such a crazy time for everyone. And then, yeah, it's just been a kind of a roller coaster kind of being here in New Zealand, just like that time that we've had lockdown. And it was kind of like cool in a way, but really weird, like just going, I'd bike around to the city and just see no cars and everyone just kind of walking around. It was just, it was kind of awesome in a way, like seeing no vehicles on the road. I wish they kind of just did like a year like that, just get rid of cars, because like pollution and everything went down here, and it was amazing. Like you go riding down the road and you wouldn't be breathing in fumes, and or you go out on the like up on the hills here and you just see, like obviously it wasn't a good thing because everyone was supposed to be like isolating, but you just see hundreds of people out on the trails. Like everyone was just loving it to be out walking and biking, and kind of as everyone was just getting back into nature, because I guess they didn't have work or anything, you know, so they just get out in the fresh air and just enjoy it. So it being really a bad time, it was actually, I feel like it was like a really good thing for New Zealand, but it's been such a bad thing for the rest of the world. I guess we were lucky we didn't have so much like people that got the disease and stuff like that, but yeah,
you guys have done a good job of handling it, that's for sure, compared to some places.
Yeah, I guess we're lucky because we're isolated here so well, so we can't. And yeah, I guess they did such a good job closing the borders in such a quick time.
Yeah, definitely. Fair play. And are things pretty much back to normal for you there now? Does it feel kind of normal, or is there still strange things in place?
Yeah, it's pretty much back to normal. I go biking. I remember I went for a ride before, and I just seen one of the 2 meter signs just still on the ground, but it's all worn out now. And I was like, oh yeah, it kind of just reminded me that it wasn't so long ago, you know. But it's just pretty much back to normal. That was the weird thing. You'd look around at people, and you'd be like, you'd walk. You felt like you had to like avoid people, so you felt like a really rude person. So you'd like see them on the road, on the other side of the road, and you're walking towards them, so you'd go to the other side of the road. You just feel like, stay away from me, you've got it. But now it's kind of just back to normal, everyone's just normal. And yeah, we haven't had any, we've had a few cases that people have come in, but yeah, we've got nothing here in New Zealand with anyone at the moment, so it kind of feels back to normal, and you feel kind of safe just doing everything. Yes, everything's back to normal. Everyone's crazy driving around, and traffic's back to normal, and just
fair play. Good stuff. Yeah, good. Hopefully the rest of the world can get there at some point. A couple more things that I wanted to talk to you about. One is what I would say is probably the best video segment in recent history, and that was your segment for Gamble over in Bariloche. Tell us a little bit about what it was like over there filming, because it looked insane.
Yeah, so I did the enduro the year before there, and I remember talking to the guys like Aaron Bartlett and Joe, and they were like, where would you want to go filming? And I was, because you know, when you want to do a segment, you want to do an awesome one. And I guess that place just kind of made it. And I was just like, I want to go there. And they were like, okay, let's do it. And we remember they messaged the guy from the bike park there, or I think the guy that runs the club there. And he was like, yeah, stoked. And then we just got a flight there. I remember it was just a mission to get there. Me and Joe flew in, and then we had to get a bus for like 5-6 hours. And we had to get it out of the border and get all our stuff out, and it was just a massive mission. But it was so cool when we got there. Because I remember the year before when we went there for the enduro, the place is just, it's kind of like Queenstown in a way, but just the most amazing food that you'd ever eat. Like meat is just like, it just melts in your mouth there. I don't know what they feed their cattle, but it was just like the guy comes out of the restaurant and he's just got a massive slab of meat, and then he's like, you want this one? And you're like, yeah, okay, you choose your meat. And the guy that shows you the meat, he goes out the back and he chucks it on the barbecue. And I just remember just having the just living like a king there. Right? It's just crazy. And it was like $20 New Zealand, and you'd get the steak that's the size of a laptop that could feed like a whole family for yourself. And then you get a whole bowl of fries and a massive bowl of salad, and it would feed like probably like a family of four or like four grown men. And that's just for one person. And I was just like, what? Okay. Whoa. Thank you. And it, yeah, that was the main thing for me. And I was like, yeah, I just want to go back there just because the food was so good. But obviously the ride in there was just bar to none. You're never going to get anything like that anywhere else unless you build your own track. It's just fresh and dirt, because the dirt's so good there because it's from the volcanic ash. So it's like so deep. It's just like a fluffy. It's like skiing, you know, when you get powder, powder day. It's just like you can't beat it. For me, it's like the same sort of thing when I raced in Schladming, you know. It's just like they rip the track and it's just like chocolate dirt. But this place is just like the powder dirt, you know. You can do anything. The dirt's just so much grip. And I remember we came to the place and it was raining for the start of the week, and we're like, oh man, we probably won't get all the dusty blow up corners. And I think that was the best part, that it did rain that much, because if it's really dry, it's really hard to go fast on it because it's so deep and just so thick. And it rained, and it was just like we could actually ride fast. And it was just, yeah. If there was any place that I wish that we could go race for a World Cup, I'd wish we could go there, you know, because the tracks are amazing there, you know. They've got like a watering system that they run on the track because the tracks are so dry and blowing out. Like, where in the world do you need like a watering system to keep the track so you don't blow it out too much? And it's just like, I remember there for the enduro, it's just like it's kind of like when you race motocross, like you do a practice, you do a race, and then you wait like a few hours and then you go out and then the track's just completely different again. It was just like, you'd practice on it for the enduro and then you'd go race it, and it was just like a whole new track. It was just like, but it was not like, you know, how a downhill track normally gets, it gets like a little bit blown out some corners. This thing, it was just like an eaten out, like whoop holes, like natural doubles that are just eaten out because it's just so, it just keeps digging out until it hits like a root or hits like bedrock or just, and it just feels like it just keeps going until it finds something, and it just chops out so much. So it's just like the amazing, most amazing soil you ever get for like a track, you know, because it's just like, obviously it's like terrible for building jumps or anything because it's never going to stay there, but it's the best like natural terrain kind of tracks that, or dirt that you're going to get for like a downhill track. So it's just, I was like a no-brainer for us. We were like, we're going there.
Sweet. Was it good when you saw the final segment all put together?
Oh, we knew straight away, like the first day when we were filming, we're just riding around and just blowing up turns. And I just, you know, it's really hard to get filmers stoked. So it's like when they're just like, whoa, you know, it's good. So like, and especially Mono, like I would, to get him stoked, it's like really hard, and he was like loving it. Obviously the first day he wasn't loving it because he broke his camera on the zip line thing because he pulled it out. So he wasn't stoked, and also he had diarrhea all week. He was struggling. he'd start filming and then he'd have to shoot off and quickly go for a little squirt in the bush. So he was struggling. He obviously didn't get the right meat or something on the plane.
Yeah, that's not an easy life, is it?
No.
It worked out. It came out really well. That final shot where you're just like back-to-back blowing up turns with your head like not moving is incredible. Like if anyone's not seen that, they definitely need to go and check it out.
Yeah, and I did that about a million times, so you better enjoy it.
Awesome. And then we can't have you on and not talk about the gloveless thing. Like what's your kind of personal reason for that? Like how did you get into riding without gloves?
I think it's always been a struggle for me with gloves. Obviously when I was younger, I rode them. I think I found one pair of gloves that kind of felt good, and I just wore them because everyone else was. I was like, oh, it must be cool. So I wore gloves, and then I was like, oh, these suck. And then I think I just forgot them. And it was just like another thing you had to remember to put on your body, because it is a Kiwi, it's like hot here. So you want to wear like nothing. We ride, when we ride down, or we pretty much rode with just shoes and a helmet and shorts and t-shirt, and that's it. And then I think it just stuck with me, and I never really enjoyed them. They just, you don't feel the bike under you. You don't feel the, like, you can't relax your hands. And it's just like a thing that's just been natural for me, and I guess I've always done it. Lots of other Kiwis do it as well, and lots of other kids like it as well. But I guess it, for now, it's the some rules at some World Cups, which is a bit of a shame. It should be whatever you want to wear, and they're making us wear body armor and all this thing. I think it's good for the junior classes to have these rules, but as an elite, we're throwing ourselves down the hill. We don't need any. Like, we've come to this point in our career, we know what our limits are and stuff. Obviously, we're going to crash and stuff, but I've never cut my hand or anything, like, because I wasn't wearing gloves. I've never had any injury. I've had more injuries because I was wearing gloves. I remember the reason why my hand blew off in Schladming is because I was wearing gloves that run, and I didn't have enough. My hands weren't holding on, so I pulled up and my hand blew off. Because I was wearing gloves, they made me wear gloves, and then I dug my hand into the ground and broke my finger because I had gloves on. So I've had more problems because of gloves. So it's yeah. Obviously, lots of people love them, but it's just a struggle for me. But yeah.
Yeah. And do you always use the same grips then? Is there like a go-to set of grips for you?
Yeah, now there's a grip, the one I run, the Deity grip. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much, I think, the best gloveless grip I've ever ran. You know, it's got, you don't, I other like the, I used to run the ODI ones, and I felt like after a day of riding, your hands would get kind of blown out, and you kind of need to run gloves because you're doing, if you're doing like 10 or 15 runs, your hands kind of get worn out. And then I felt like these ones are just like soft and they're a bit thicker, and they've got a little, I feel like I don't sweat as much in them. They kind of like vent the air in this kind of somehow. They're just like the best grips I've ever ran, and I don't think I'd ever want to change. I don't like, they've told me to help them design one, and I just feel like I couldn't like fix it. It's just so awful, man.
Like, which ones are they?
It's like the, it's got a waffle bottom sort of thing, and then it's got like, I don't know the name of them. I should know them. It's pretty bad, but.
Is it lines on the top or a kind of no thing?
Yeah, it's like a line crisscross over.
Oh, like knuckle duster.
Yeah, that's it, I think. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Fair play.
Yeah, I should know it. It's pretty bad of me, but
that's all good.
I've always been pretty bad with the things that I run. I just run it and I love it.
Do you ever put anything on your hands? Do you ever like put a bit of dust on them, or you just get stuck in?
Always dust, you know, do a little pad in the dirt at the top of the hill all the time. It's the best sort of stuff. I remember when I was on La Pierre, Laron, the team manager, he brought me some climbing dust to try on. I was like, oh, yeah, this would be cool. Obviously, climbers use it. And that was just like the worst thing ever, because like you need to keep dusting your hands halfway down, because it just, once it gets, you get sweaty, it just gets so slippery. It's like the it's like the worst thing ever. So, yeah, dust does the job. And I've never, like when I do enduro, I don't wear gloves, and we do like 15-minute runs sometimes, like top of the world, and they're fine, eh?
Fair play. I'll have to give it a try one day.
Yeah, you'll love it.
Nice. All right. Well, you've been at it a fair while now. Like, been racing a long time, traveling a long time. What do you think the key to the longevity side of things is? How do you keep it fresh?
I think it was always a dream of mine when I was a kid to race my bike, and that's all I ever wanted to do. I was terrible at school. I think if I didn't have racing, I'd be just like everyone else in New Zealand. I'd rather be a builder or a chippy, or just like my father, just an engineer or something, just, you know, just making enough money to kind of put food on the table. And yeah, so I think for me, it was just like racing was my chance to see the world and get out there and go and do it and enjoy it. And At the time when I was a junior, I didn't really think of that. But now looking back, I was like, oh, I'm so lucky that I started racing and was good enough to go overseas and being able to see the world. Because my first year when I was a junior, when they said that I was going to France, I was like, or when I was going to Scotland, I was like, oh, yeah, or France and Italy. I thought France and Italy, they were like different islands. I knew nothing. I didn't know Italy and France were on the same island. I thought they were all small, like different bits of the world, you know. So I knew nothing, and my parents just sent me over, and I remember going to Innsbruck, and I had shorts on, and it was snowing, and the team manager was like, "What? You've only got jandals and shorts and just riding gear?" And I was like, "Yeah. I'm just here to ride my bike." Because in New Zealand, I never wore pants because it was never cold enough in Whanganui in the North Island. It's kind of just like average winters, you know, never really freezing. So I always had shorts. But I remember when I got there, I was like, snow. I was like, wow, this is crazy. I've never been seen snow or anything. Like we live by the mountain, but we never really went there often because we just did mountain biking. So
yeah,
it was like an eye-opener. So yeah, I think the whole thing was just like, yeah, I just knew I loved riding my bike and I was just going to do the best I could. I remember all I did was younger, I was just rode my bike. And I think that was the major thing, you know, and you look now, like you have to do those so many hours to be like so good at anything. And I just put in the effort. I remember going to school, I had ruts all the way to school and I'd sprint home and I'd go riding dirt jumps until it was dark and then just eat dinner and go to bed and then wake up, do the same thing every day until I started racing World Cup stuff and then realized that you need to train and you got to have a structure and eat good food and do testing and ride your downhill bike. And then it just kind of, now it's like not like a job, but it's more like, you know, it's a structured thing. Before, mm-hmm. when you're younger, you're just like, okay, go and send it and have fun, but which it should be still for the kids these days, you know. I wish I'd see more of that, but you see some of the kids now, it's just like more of a, I think with social media it's a little bit different. They got to go filming or they got lots of things that they want to do and they got to show off or whatever, you know. I think it's different these days, you know. The kids don't really want to race as much. They don't there's a lot of kids that want to, but there's some that just, they just go ride because they love riding. But there's like, because when in my era, we couldn't go riding. We could go riding, but if we wanted to go do runs, we had to go to a race.
Yeah.
So it's different. Like now you just go and do hundreds of runs in the bike park and you don't need to go and race. You can just have fun with your friends. So for me to have that kind of same sort of thing that the kids have these days, I had to go to races. And all your friends were at the races, so you just went. And I guess that's why our era, there's a lot more dudes that were good in New Zealand because we had Brooke and Wynn and Eddie and George Brannigan and all of us. That era, we were racing each other and we went overseas and we've all done so well now and it's our job and we get to race the world together. And there hasn't really been any other juniors since then to kind of come through. So it's saying that there's Guy, the junior that's come through, he's the first junior since I think George Brannigan that's had a factory ride. So it's good to see what a young fella coming through now and he's kind of the same because it's where he lives, he has to go either to a race to go ride or it's a bit harder for him. He lives like I think an hour from Rotorua, so it's like he has to go and do a race to, you know, get the same sort of thing like the kids have here in Christchurch. So I guess that's kind of helped him in a way. And he's such a kid, you know. So, but I wish that in saying that there was a lot more kids that would come to races and kind of enjoy it because I see so many kids riding here, but then you come to like a race here and there's just not many kids coming. I guess it is kind of hard because it costs so much to do a race, but. Yeah, I wish the downhill thing would kind of start growing back to what it was, but it's just kind of fading out a little bit.
Yeah, so it's the same here in the UK. I think the uplift parks are awesome. It's great to have that facility, but it's definitely having an impact on racing, I think, at the bottom end.
Yeah.
Not so many people coming through because you don't, like you say, you don't have to go to races to get the riding in anymore.
Yeah.
I kind of good that there's still some fast kids coming through though.
Yeah. I kind of changed that thing, but didn't really say what your answer was. So I think, what was it?
Your how you've kept it fresh, I guess. Because training must get stale after a while, like 16 years or more of doing the same kind of off seasons, and it must be hard.
It doesn't really though. It's just, imagine if you're in the office, having an office job and was working in front of a computer every day, you know, that gets stale, I think. I could, if I did that, I'd probably stab my eyeballs out. And I would, but there's obviously people that love it, you know, so it's the same sort of thing for me. I love riding and there's nothing else that I want to do. But I've been lucky enough to be able to get paid in my career, and I can do other things. So I love fishing, I love surfing, I love motocross, I love going, doing anything, hiking. So it's kind of, I have so many other things that kind of get me away from the sport. So that's what I feel like I've been doing a lot these last few years, once I've been getting like enough money to be able to enjoy my life. And yeah, so I try and do a lot of fishing. I feel like I've done a lot of fishing this year because I've never been able to do it as much because I'm normally overseas, and this is the time where the weather is so much better, you know, we get light winds here and it's so good on the sea. The seas are so flat, and I really love spear fishing. So it's just like another release for me. I could spend all day in the water. It's just awesome seeing things in the water. And it's kind of like good training for me, you know, breath holds and getting in the water and doing things. And I just love seeing, like, it's like another world, you know. It's like mountain biking, but it's like you're doing something, another extreme thing. So just anything extreme I love because, like, skiing, motocross, it's just all the same sort of, like, kind of, it's like biking, but it's not, you know, it's different. So
you're still getting some fitness from it.
Oh, yeah, I just try and just do heaps of different things that just keep me stoked. And then once I get back on the bike, I'm just so stoked. So you got to have those things that, like, obviously when I was younger, all I did was biking 24/7 until I was probably 20, you know. I just rode, and then I think that's why I've realized that you had to do other things to keep yourself, like, because if I just kept riding, I'd probably burn out and things would get really stale. But I think and with the training side of it, I just enjoy it. I don't think I could ever be a person that just sits around, you know. I'm kind of ADD. My wife says to me sometimes, I can't really sit down. I'm always doing something. Like, even if I'm on my rest day, I'm outside gardening or going for a hike, taking my daughter for a hike or walking the dog or doing some yoga or stretching or just working on the body to make it better, or, you know, just trying to do anything, you know, to be better the next day, you know. So when I do start training again, it's just awesome. It's just everything. I can be better, you know.
Fair play. Nice one. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got four questions that we've asked pretty much everyone, so we'll hit those up. And the first one of those, if our listeners had £150, which is about 290 New Zealand dollar at the moment, I think, to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they go and spend it on? And it's not going to be gloves, is it?
Save your money on the gloves. honestly, that probably money would go towards tires on your bike. Like the rubber on the ground is a major thing. I was just like an eye opener. Like, it just reminds me, like, because today I was riding my cross country bike and it just had skinny tires with no traction on it, and I was just like, oh man, it's so scary. Everything you're pinging off it, and if I had like the downward like rubber and stuff on that bike, it would just feel so much sicker, and I could be so much more aggressive. And that's just like one thing that money would just make your bike 100 times better. At obviously a Maxxis, I think the Essa guy was just one of the best tires, and probably it depends. Like, most guys are trail riding, so like a double down casing, it would just make your bike, like, because it the tire and the casing and everything just makes the it's the contact on the ground, you know, and just makes you ride so much more aggressive. Even if you have like probably a rigid bike, it'd make your bike so much better, you know.
Fair play. Would you ride just on the front with the Assegai, or do you use it on the rear as well?
Yeah, I run it front and back on my downhill bike, but on my trail bike, I run the Assegai and then I run the Aggressor on the rear. Because I like it on the trail bike because it's faster rolling and it just lasts forever. So to anyone out there, if they wants a really good rear tire, the Aggressor is really good.
Are you cutting the Aggressor at all? I know I was chatting to Robin Woolner recently and he was saying he takes out one of the center knobs to improve the braking on it. But
oh, yeah. No, I don't. I kind of like it kind of loose and slippery and drifty in the rear. And that's why I run the Assegai on the front, because you're just never going to lose any the front end. It's just such a good tire in all conditions, eh?
Nice. Yeah, I haven't tried the Assegai. I'd have to give it a go.
Yeah. It's definitely cool. I've ridden for some like different tire companies, and yeah, it's definitely one of the best tires I've ran. I'm really
awesome. Cool. Second question. If you could wind back the clock to sit down with yourself at the age of 16, what advice would you give him?
Probably spend a little bit more time reading books and enjoying other things than just riding your bike, you know, because all I did was just ride my bike and it's a hard one to say, you know. At 16, because I was at school still, so I'd probably say put my head down into the school a little bit more harder, because now I wish I'm trying to learn a lot more and do things like that now, but it's a lot harder when you're older.
Yeah, the brain doesn't soak things up quite as easily, does it?
Nah, but when I was at school, all I was doing looking out the window and just thinking about biking. So school was pretty much a waste of time for me when I was at school. I went there for lunch and then PE and hang out with my friends and the automotive classes. I was good at those.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, third question. If you could have a coaching session from anybody, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
That's good, I know. There's a lot of people that kind of I listen to and kind of try and take bits and pieces from. It wouldn't be, I don't think there would be just one.
You can have a couple, it's all right.
Yeah, it probably seems weird. Like, I'd like to talk to like Conor McGregor, because he's just like a, I don't know, he's a machine.
Yeah.
It's just like he can do anything. And then, like other people that I've always looked up to, like in different sports, like Travis Pastrana, he's just like a hardworking person. Just to have a chat with him, just to see, because he was like one of the best motocross racers, and he's just like a hard worker. Like I've heard things he does is just like mental. He's like, to get ready for things, he just puts his training bike in the sauna, so he can like train at those temperatures, like out of control, just mental things. And yeah, just people like that, you know, there's not just one, there's like a heaps of guys, and they just got good insights. Like when you listen to those kind of people, they're just like onto it.
Yeah. Fair play.
They got different thoughts, you know, on everything.
Yeah, it's always good to get that diverse kind of input from different people, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't get one thing from someone, you know. Well, you could, but it's good to be rounded.
Yeah, definitely. All right, last question. What do you do every day that you feel benefits you?
The one thing I do it seems weird, but I pretty much attack my body with a lacrosse ball in the mornings.
Okay.
Because I'm getting older, but I'm flexible. But it just, what's one thing that I do in the mornings, it just makes my body feel mint for the day. And I kind of do it at the evenings as well. And then, because I just did a big ride before, and after I did that, my legs were screwed after my ride. And once I did that, it just gets the blood flow and everything. And you just feel like a kid again after you do that kind of stuff. It's just small things like that. So that'd be one thing for me.
Are there particular parts of your body that you attack, or is it literally kind of all over?
Literally kind of all over. But mostly it's just the bits that I'm feeling tight. So in the morning, it's kind of like your upper body. So I go onto the wall and do my chest and my back and my neck. And then I got like a bigger ball that I kind of hit the hip flexors with, and then the bottom of the legs and everything. And I feel like it gets the body firing for like my workouts and ready to go. Otherwise you feel a bit tighter. And I don't really like stretching as much, because I used to do a lot of stretching, but I feel like it's just kind of weakens, or it doesn't, you know, it's good to have tighter muscles. It's better just to kind of just attack the body with the lacrosse ball, and it frees it up a lot better.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that for? And was it painful when you first started?
Yeah, it was painful when I first started, but now it feels kind of good pain. Years now.
Okay.
I think I started maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But before that, I just stretched lots, and that was the worst thing to do, because it was just tightening. You know, when you got tight muscles and you're not getting it loosened from like a lacrosse ball or anything, you just end up twisting the muscles and tightening them more, and it just makes it worse. It feels a good release, but you're just doing worse on your body.
Okay. And lacrosse ball is super easy to travel with as well, I guess. So it's something you can take everywhere.
Yeah, when I'm flying, I'm always at the back toilet. Probably looks like I'm pashing the wall, just rubbing my body up on the walls and everything. So I'm the weird one out the back, just doing weird things, playing with my lacrosse ball. It's the one thing it's like the best equipment that anyone could buy, you know. It's so cheap. You can have a tennis ball, but I've got like a rubbery one, so it kind of helps grip on the wall, and it's a lot easier and a bit heavier and bounce around, something to play with too when you're bored.
Yeah. Awesome. Good stuff. All right. Well, hopefully we get some racing in the back end of the year, and we get to see how you get on at Lusa, and hope it all goes well for you. If people want to keep up with what you're up to, where's the best place for them to follow you?
Probably just on Instagram, just Sam Blingensop. Just look it up. It's pretty easy. Yeah, it's kind of where I do everything. I just put things when I'm riding or whatever. If you want to ask me a question, just ask me anything. You know, I'm easy. I kind of just try and help out anyone if they want help, and yeah, just try and do anything. If anyone needs anything, or if you want to go riding with me, just message me. I'm easy. Yeah, it's always cool to ride with the younger guys and try and help them out. I try and do that here in New Zealand, ride with younger guys, and it's cool. Then once you've ridden with them, then you know them, and you can kind of have a chat, and yeah, it might help them out in their career, or they might not race it, or they may or may not. So it's cool to have do that, I guess, kind of give back a little bit, because I feel like the sport's given me so much, so I want to give back as much as I can.
Awesome. That's super nice, man. Well, thanks a lot. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting and finding out more about your career so far. And I'm looking forward to seeing a good few more years of you tearing it up at downhill races and maybe some more enduros.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Nice one. Cheers, Sam.
Cheers. Have a good one.
All right, that's it for this episode with Sam. I hope you enjoyed listening. A massive thanks to Nukeproof and Abbey Bike Tools for supporting this episode. Don't forget to head over to abbeybiketools.com to check out their range of amazing precision tools which are built for cycling, and especially their amazing toolkit options, so that you can keep everything you need in order and in one place, just like the World Cup mechanics do. Also, don't forget to head to nukeproof.com and check out their entire range. If you want to be in with a chance of winning a set of their new Nukeproof Horizon wheels, then you just need to head to downtimepodcast.com/nukeproof and answer the really easy question. It even tells you where to find the answer. All the links you need are in the show notes for this episode over on downtimepodcast.com. Don't forget to check out all the new t-shirts over at downtimepodcast.com/shop, where you can pick yourself up some new threads and help support the podcast at the same time. Leaving a review of the show wherever you listen is really great for helping new people find the podcast. So if you've got a couple of minutes, then it'd be great if you could leave us a review wherever you listen. Please make sure you subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode. And please, please keep on spreading the word amongst your riding mates. The more people that are listening, the easier this is for me to keep this thing going and bringing you more great episodes every week. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, look after each other and get out and ride.